You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Where did you find out that?
I read the abstract.
It's implausible deniability.
And so it is. I've been taking your name in vain, Stella.
And that's fair enough.
It's thinking whether you'd get here at 20 past nine exactly.
It is a famous trait of mine.
How's your week been?
Really good, thank you. How about you, Karen?
Yeah, good. Not too bad. One of the, Christmas and all that.
Everyone wants to catch up.
Yeah, weirdly.
Perfect time for it.
Right.
No one's busy.
Been to any Christmas parties?
Not as of yet.
No?
Planning? They're looming on the horizon, though.
Right. What do you think of Christmas parties?
I think it depends on the organisation.
I think, oh no.
Right. The BFM one, though.
Yeah.
That's going to be great.
Oh, yes, that's on the 20th, isn't
that's
it?
That's voluntary.
Right, yeah. Voluntary.
Voluntary Christmas party. Forced fun, never good.
The one where you're sitting next to somebody and, if there's no mingling going on, that's the entire night over.
No.
Yeah, anyway, let's not go there.
No, let's not.
Let's go to fMRI. This is a pretty serious subject.
It
for
is.
A rainy Saturday morning.
It is, yes, tone fitting. But I can't lie, the idea for this instalment actually came from a really sunny day where I wanted to reprise my years of playing tennis because the study I'm going to talk about involves thinking about tennis, and it was in one of my papers in university, and I remember being completely mind blown by it but then never really investigating further for whatever reason. But it is about a really creative method of attempting to communicate with patients who are in long-term comas, so obviously unable to move. So fMRI is a technology that allows the scanner to track blood flow to certain regions of the brain as a sort of indirect measure of activity in that region. It stands for functional magnetic resonance imaging, and it works off the principle that the more a certain region of the brain is working, or the harder that it's working, the more resource, aka oxygen, it's using. So it measures changes in blood oxygenation and flow. And then we get maps of activity in the brain. So it's very cool and it's very useful. And it doesn't involve radiation, which is good for the patient. So researchers had the idea to put coma patients who seem unresponsive in these machines to see the level of activity that they're exhibiting, which one figure puts the amount of people who are assumed to be vegetative, who are actually fully conscious, as being 15 to 20%. So that's a high rate of misdiagnosis of that. And as I'm sure you can imagine, that would be a horrifying experience if you are conscious and in a coma. By conscious, I mean you are able to have an internal world, not standing up
hear
or walking
what's
around.
Going on
yeah.
Or,
well, there and on the hearing front, obviously it's really hard to ascertain, but some of them can hear and can hear what's going on. You know, like know the names of their carers, that kind of thing. I'll get to how they know. We figure out that they know. They don't respond to external stimuli, but they are internally conscious, which is fascinating in of itself. But on top of this, these researchers devised a plan to communicate with these patients that are conscious. So this was back in 2010, which is quite a while ago in terms of science, but it is a roundabout sort of way, but it's like a code. So there is a region in the brain called the premotor cortex that becomes highly active when you imagine moving your arms around, for instance. This is because it's associated with behaviour of our trunk muscles. So the researchers said to the patient, which you can see Karen's doing really good arm flapping scenario.
I'm flapping my trunk.
That sounds really unnerving, actually.
I don't think you can flap your trunk.
No, oh, right. God willing, no. I feel like that would be disastrous on many fronts. But the researchers said to the patient, think about playing tennis as an answer for yes. So playing tennis is the code for yes. Because obviously in tennis you're moving your arms a lot, so the yes answer would be associated with the fMRI activity in the premotor cortex. So for no, the code was to think about wandering around your home and thinking about everything that would be in there. So that's tapping into the parahippocampal gyrus, which is a region associated with memory encoding and retrieval. So obviously it's very active when you're retrieving memories, like remembering walking around your home. So that's the no answer. And crucially, these regions are really far away from one another in the brain. So high levels of activity would be easy to spot if you're delineating between them, which is very smart on the researcher's part. So the patient they did this, they did it just with one patient first, and then they extrapolated that. But the first patient they did this with in 2010, first of all, He reliably answered questions via this yes or no thought method about his family, which is, you know, there's a lot of debate as to whether they can form new memories while they're in a coma, or if they can remember everything that happened to them before they got into that coma. But the family kind of scenario is a very, I feel like, would be the most reliable, you know, someone's going to remember their family. So he answered those questions reliably, which is really crazy. He also answered a lot of other things correctly, you know, that this patient liked to watch ice hockey. And they said, do you like to watch ice hockey? Do you still like to watch ice hockey? He said, yes.
Well, he went to tennis.
Well, he went to tennis. Yes, he went to mental tennis in the mind palace.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really, really mind-blowing. And it's, I guess, a glimmer of hope for people to communicate with their loved ones, that kind of thing. But things did get very controversial with this when the researchers asked him, they did have the permission of his family, they asked his family beforehand, if they asked him if he was in any pain, which I imagine if the answer was yes, that would be a very hard thing to hear. But he answered no to that, which is good. And then they continued over a period of months to ask this patient questions using this method, and he answered reliably. And then they branched out into things that weren't objectively true, you know, opinion-based, that kind of thing. So there was a controversy even further when this paper came out and the authors suggested, and then other people started to suggest as well, they thought about extrapolating this, if the concept was very reliable, to asking patients if they'd like to be taken off life support, which is obviously a huge decision and needs to be made by the person. But even if we are sure that that's reliable, are we sure that that's reliable in that instance? There have not been any cases where they've used this method for that question, which is, I would say, good. But there also haven't been any studies quite as explosive as this one in this area since it happened, because it was one of those first methods of communication, things that weren't moving a finger or that kind of stuff, which again is quite unreliable. They could just be involuntarily twitching, that kind of thing. But it also alludes to something we know to be true, which I find crazy, which is that when you imagine doing something, it creates similar but definitely not identical patterns of activity in our brains. So the tennis argument, the tennis example, is exactly that. Both of them are exactly that. But yeah, when you think about doing something, it's very similar to doing it. Obviously, not quite the same, because when you're doing it, you're building muscle memory, all of that jazz.
Mm. There's research about when you think, you know, if you just think in your mind that you're playing the piano.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can play it as well as somebody who's been practicing the piano.
Really?
Yeah, I should send it to you.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Not as well.
But
if you're a classical pianist or something.
Mental rehearsal.
Mental rehearsal, yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. I mean, yeah, it's congruent with this, and it's also used in a lot of anxiety and PTSD therapies for exposure therapy, which has been proven for a long time to be very, very effective. A safe space to face phobias is the mind. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a very, very fascinating
concept. It's interesting when you think about, so we can all stop at a moment, and if you're driving or whatever, keep focusing. Right. Well, you can stop, but focus. If you think about playing tennis in your mind right now, and then think about going into your house and thinking about all the things that are in your kitchen, for example, they do seem like they are separate parts of the mind.
I would agree, yeah.
Because it's like you revert from one part of your brain to another part of your brain.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's getting into the mind and brain theory, which is rife. But it's an entirely different mental state, and it feels like a very tangible shift.
It's like you cross the road or something and go into another area.
Yeah. Definitely. But there's also a condition, which is randomly now, there's a condition where people can't internally bring up a visual on command. So when they're like reading, for instance, they're not having an internal world being built for them. It's just words, which I found really interesting as well. So I wonder what if someone had that condition.
Somebody listening would not have been able to do that.
Yeah. I'm not sure how common it is, though.
Yeah.
So that's one thing.
Okay, well, my brain is sore now.
Yeah, me too. There's a lot of gymnastics going on.
Right. It's one of those days. Maybe it's because of the rain.
I think it might be.
Yeah.
Who who knows what's going on out there. But yeah, as I say, 2010 was the big year for this, and then there doesn't seem to have been much progress, or maybe the right word is investment, into this certain method, maybe because of ethical issues. That's a massive question, if they were working towards extrapolating that, but I found it fascinating nonetheless.
Yeah, it is fascinating. Thank you very much for introducing us to the whole concept.
My pleasure.
And what's your track for today? Oh. I know what it is, actually. It's in front of me, but you can say it.
Yeah, you've given me the baton here. It's yeah. French, which I'm famously bad at. Ceci Nest, Pas un cliché, from Charlotte Adigeri and Bolas People.
What did you say?
Karen? You know.
Ceci n'est pas un cliché, cliché, something like that. Okay. From who?
Charlotte Adigeri and Bolas People.
Oh, that's an interesting name, Bolas People.
I found it really good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gym today?
No, walking my parents' dog.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
You would take Luna with you. She's here now. Okay.
Might do.
Right.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.